Hello, and welcome to the Arcana Archives, a deep dive into nerddom. We are currently in the process of our first in-person recording.
It's true. We're in the same room.
It's so weird staring into your eyes in person while...
Not through a computer screen?
Yes. Oh my goodness. We don't have that virtual world that is separating the sheer mass of nerddom.
Yeah, I forgot how to make eye contact too. So when you said staring into your eyes, you're assuming that I can look into somebody's eyes for longer than 3 seconds without having an emotional breakdown.
Normally it just like radiates through the airwaves, through the internet. But no, today it is straight across the room from each other. But anyways, I forgot to prepare a fun fact. But let me think of one real quick. It's not coming to me. You go first, and maybe I'll have one.
Fun fact, we're in my living room right now.
Ooh, that's a good one. I can't say that. My fun fact is, Chelsea and I have matching screaming goat little statuettes.
Oh,
and mine sits
true.
Right in front of me as I record, along with a Mr. Rogers one.
I'm gonna go get it and make it scream.
Oh no.
I'm doing it.
It's for the people.
Beautiful. Hope that picked up.
It was for the people.
Yes. But anyways. Ohio Gosai. No, I'm not doing that again. But no, that relates to what my topic is going to be. And I know I've done a lot of Japanese culture ones, but this one is directly related to the area of study that I want to go into for my master's and possibly PhD.
God, you're such a weeb.
And do a whole bunch of research for the rest of my life. And that would be great. Eventually teach. But this, I thought... I did one kind of like this before where I brought you a paper that I had written, and the last one was on acoustics, and this one was on my senior music history seminar paper that is going to fuel my research for maybe the rest of my life.
Oh, and I've heard a little bit about this. I think I'm really excited to hear more.
It is called Stuck in Your Head, An Analysis of Japanese Oral Tradition in Folk Song.
Stuck in your head. Is it because the folk songs get stuck in your head?
Yes. And oral tradition and all of that, all memory stuff. So
it's not stuck on you like Band-Aid brand?
No. But it will stick with me for the rest of my life, possibly. So there we go.
All right.
But anyways, I can get into this a little here. I had to, present this as in a conference style setting that my school puts on every year, except for I don't know if they did one last year because online is weird, but I had to do this one online, instead of in person because it was right at the start of COVID.
Oof.
Yes. But anyways, let's get into this. So Qohelet compiled Ecclesiastes centuries before Christ with stories and beliefs taken from the oral tradition that was spoken around him. He sought to use his wisdom to write down the proverbs spoken in his culture's lore with accuracy and precision so as to preserve their values. Respect for this accuracy had been lost for many centuries until the concern was again sparked with the Romantic movement's focus on telling and teaching stories of the distant past and folk tradition. Before this, most research and writings on oral tradition came from distantly related written accounts that continued to dilute the precision of the original message presented through spoken word. This paper will analyze the Japanese folk song tradition to show how oral transmission has preserved the history and thought of cultures from ancient times to the present day, drawing from sources such as Ryutaro Hattori's Japanese folk songs with piano accompaniment, as well as an understanding of oral tradition from Walter J. Ong's Orality and Literacy. I will explore how oral tradition and folk song can be used as a means of transmitting traditions to future generations and as a way of respecting past values and understanding them in the context of today's society. I will argue how folk song can be used as a foundation to support our understanding of written history.
I am still laughing at how you struggled to say precision the first time because it's kind of ironic.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Maybe I'll edit that out.
Oh no, then I'm just going to sound like an asshole.
but yeah, at any time, if you have any questions, just interrupt me within any of this, and I might have an answer for you. Any questions right off the bat? You're looking puzzled.
The very first few words you said sounded like you were speaking a different language because my brain hadn't caught up yet.
Yeah, so Kohelet was... Yeah, so Ecclesiastes was a book of the Old Testament Bible, and Kohelet was said to compile that, and yeah, so...
I knew that.
And that was mostly based off of oral tradition, they suppose.
Throwback to when I used to go to church.
Ooh.
Now I'm a card-holding member of the Satanic Temple.
Ooh. But anyways, on to this. First section, transmission and song. Primary oral cultures create and preserve distinct practices and stories of localized history among those of different strata, circumstances, and beliefs beyond those set and distributed in a standardized text. This flexibility within the context of ancient Japan has allowed the adaptation of lessons to different dialects and to allow those of different provinces and prefectures to preserve their own specific culture and heritage rather than be generalized. This is especially prevalent in folk song, and though often carrying many of the same themes, the great distances between provinces in Japan as well as environmental factors have been reflected in individual styles and concerns, resulting in many minor subcultures. These songs, though often originating great distances from each other and reflecting their own styles and dialects, carry many of the same themes.
So, I know that... Indigenous people of North America passed down their history through oral history, folk songs, and other forms of oral communication. And now you're telling me that Japan does that too, which I actually didn't know, so that's really interesting. But do you know if any other cultures from around the world use lots of like folk songs in oral history, or is it like super specific to just a few cultures?
Yeah, not so much in Japan really anymore. Like there's still like mm-hmm. a couple like masters and like master monks that keep the tradition alive, and I believe some of my research came from accounts of those people, but I know for certain, like I do a lot of research into ancient Greece and before there was writings for that, and that pops up as a little more of the scientific study of this oral tradition. And I do plan on getting into, like Native American and First Nations peoples eventually as a to sort of ground, in more cultures, this mm-hmm. oral tradition research. But yes, other than that, like, I know there's a ton of like tribes, all throughout like Africa and like, Southeast Asia, the Asian islands that also mostly do a like an oral passing of knowledge and history.
Cool. I guess I was also wondering about like Europe as a whole, namely Britain.
Yeah,
I just
don't,
can't see them having oral history.
No, that like not so much anymore. Yeah, because like written language has been around for like 6,000 years. And I think, yeah, most of Europe is what developed that, and then like into China and stuff with the character languages.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, on to the next section, Bonsong, Coal Mines, and Lover's Longing. So, the styles and dialects and everything that I was talking about before. So these can be observed in a lot of these songs that I did research into. So, and this is from this book Ryutaro Hattori compiled, which is like from the 50s or 60s, this version that I have right in front of me.
You'll have to send me a picture of it so I can post it on our Instagram too when this episode is released.
Absolutely. Yeah, but it has a compilation of like mostly like what started as oral lessons and they put in song for like easy remembering. And so each of these discuss themes of a lover's loneliness. So this is Songs of Kisarazu and the Mower's Songs. So they each discuss themes of a lover's loneliness due to their own or their partner's departure, despite the song's origins being separated by an entire country and a large sea channel. So while the Mower's Songs take the perspective of the male workers, the Songs of Kisarazu tell of the wives peering out over the sea that gave their husbands access to Tokyo and their longing to be reunited day by day. While Kisarazu has since become a famous port for painters and tourism, this song speaks of a time where it struggled and its people were forced to find work far away in Tokyo. This is an important chapter in its history that has been carried on by the popularization and longevity of this song. So, the origins of the coal miner songs of Jōben and Kyūshū are situated similarly to the lover's songs, and both speak of the troubles faced in the mines, though the one from Kyūshū focuses more on the contrast between the tall smokestacks and the beautiful mountain flowers that they cannot see in the mines. The song from Jōben is sung much slower and includes chanting lines that display the workers' anger and fear of the conditions they face. They lament their early mornings, the dangers of working so far underground with explosives, and their seemingly inevitable demise that will leave their wives widows.
Are these artists, I guess, you're talking about? Were they the people who originally wrote the folk songs, or were they the
So the artists are like, that's a new thing. This used to be a very small port, and then it became probably a couple centuries later, like more famous for artists and tourism as like technology and mode of travel developed.
Right.
Yes. So on to this section, and these are the ones that I did a lot of research into. One of these, the Dune of Tosa, and the other one is the Bon Song of Chichibu. So, though nearer to each other in origin, they faced entirely different circumstances because of their terrain. So, in the time of Bon, a festival celebrating dead ancestors in which much dancing and singing takes place to please the spirits, the people ask their ancestors through these productions to bless them in the coming year. So in the case of the Song of Chichibu, Hattori states that it is, quote, sung in the hope and joy of the rich harvest of the year, end quote. And due to their situation in the mountains, it would be rare to get shipments of supplies from outside of the town, meaning that they had to rely on their own harvest to get them through another year. And this was not the case in Tosa, which was a famous port city in the northern provinces, and carried shipments of rice and other supplies through, like, really frequently. So, this section is called With a Yo-Ho-Ho, a Departure from Tosa.
I hope that whoever graded that paper for you loved that part.
Oh, yeah. I believe I got a pretty good grade on it. Memorability is another huge concern for primary oral traditions. As once something has been forgotten, then it is lost to the void with no hope of recovery. Thus, song and dance play a vital role in sustaining the lessons and culture that is to be passed down to younger generations. This is because of the ability of a simple verbal and visual cue to stick in the minds of the listener after only a few repetitions and retain it for many years. Bon productions were created to be easily and widely accessible as well as understood to people of all ages to recall their ancestors and pass down their practice to future generations. Thus, elements can be observed in many of the Bon traditions that reflect this catering to mass appeal.
If that's the case where everything's supposed to be like easy to remember, then my oral history is Hickory Dickory Dock, the Itsy Bitsy Spider, and the old lady who swallowed the fly.
Yes. Well, that's a huge thing, is that we are primarily like literature-based cultures now and mm-hmm. written, and it's really hard to go back to sort of that sort of lesson-based just oral learning once we are such a literate nation.
Do you think it's because we like literally evolved away from doing oral learning, or just because we don't learn from a young age to learn that way?
Yeah, just focuses shift, and there's formulas to memorizing in an oral culture as well, and also so many words develop out of a literate literate culture.
Oh, interesting.
That like normally there would be maybe like a few hundred words in an oral culture, and then just they would mean many different things based on context. Where
that makes sense.
Once you have the ability to jot it down, then you have just like full
tens of thousands of words
of full words. So it becomes harder as you are in a literate culture, and we're learning really young too, to expand our vocabularies and read and do all this to go back to a primary oral tradition.
That makes sense.
Yes. So the folk dance known as Bon Odori was established in the Edo period and is the simplest dance in Japanese folk traditions. This is because it is meant to be performed by a great number of people of all ages and in any attire. There is no required special skill or clothing, making it simple for anyone to participate. The dance is to be performed with absolute uniformity to represent the immense strength of the people together, and be a demonstration to the returning spirits as the masses moving as one body. The clapping of hands is done as a way of worship, as well as an instrument that anyone can perform with. Folk songs of the Nembutsu, a recitation of a Buddha's name, have also come to be included in the dance and have influenced its practice, creating another element to pass on the festival traditions and remind the masses of its importance. So it's just all sort of memorization cues, where like you can have a dance to go along with something, or you can have the song and melody that will help you remember the words and the story or the lesson that you're supposed to pass down.
Well, that makes sense. And then there's also probably more room to memorize all of that stuff because you don't have a ton of random cat facts or animal facts in your brain.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yeah. But yeah, a similar practice is used verbally in the Dune of Tosa and many other folk songs to appeal to a mass of people. Included are brief lines of syllables of sounds that do not translate into meaningful word, but more serve as catchy filler that gives character to the folk songs. And these are equivalent to the English, like, ta-da-da-boom-dee. They don't have any real necessary meaning in English, but they just evoke sort of emotion or filler between that. Or yo-ho-ho, at which the title comes from, and they serve only to be memorable and not portray a certain meaning.
It's all coming together now.
Yes. So this can be displayed at the end of the first line of the Dune of Tosa, Tosa no Sunayama, and then Na-a-ye, where after Sunayama, there is no explicit meaning delivered in the Na-a-ye. It's just words. So though there is no explicit need for elements like dance and catchy hooks in the portrayal of the lesson or story, these elements as a whole help to shape the experience and create a more distinct memory in the minds of the performers and witnesses, assisting the song in sustaining the message through generations.
Do you think if there was an apocalypse that the first generation born out of the survivors of the apocalypse wouldn't know nearly like a quarter of the stuff that you and I just know? Because
yeah,
how would they learn it?
Yeah, like I think I get into that a little bit later with the ancient Greek traditions.
Ooh, interesting.
You have like large works like the Iliad and Odyssey that were like primary oral like works that, and they just sort of compile, and they grew and grew and grew in history, and people would memorize them through formulas.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so that's how they got to be such epic works, is because it was like hundreds of years of their history that was primarily mm-hmm. oral
and also passed down. Hundreds and hundreds of editors as people who are telling the oral history.
Mm, yes.
Fix it.
Yes. So this section called Voices from the Past, I'll probably just skim over this a little for some more important bits. So Japanese foretelling songs played an important role in the compilation of thousands of years of their history by reflecting on the major political and social issues of the times that they were written. Foretelling songs are forms of oracular message contained in the popular songs of Japan that were interpreted to tell of a significant event after it had happened. This came from an earlier Chinese tradition where events were believed to be foretold by songs given to oracles by the gods. So through their belief in oracles and the recognition of a few events predicted through these foretelling songs, the interest in and rate at which they were recorded increased, and songs were easy to memorize and thus carried the messages more easily across the country. So it's sort of an effect of the more there are, the more likely it's going to foretell, like we got into with the Simpsons episode, is people started, there were like a few cases where a song sort of predicted events that happened in the future, and then as that happened, people started creating more and more songs with that intent in mind, and then more and more stuff lined up afterwards.
And of course, with history. No statute of limitations, everything is bound to come true eventually, because there's so many people and so many songs that coincidences just happen.
Yes. So on to the next section. I'm gonna cut that short. I just thought that was really interesting. But a Bon Song's hidden story. Hattori's compilation of Japanese folk songs opens another window to the concerns and practices of peoples across historical Japan and a respect for ancestral values. While he does not present a scholarly study of a complete collection of Japanese folk songs, his translations and brief historical context for each song allow the musician or reader to voice the lessons and issues of past communities, understand the range of their traditions and culture, and carry on the history of peoples long since gone. In Hattori's words, "My efforts in compiling this book does not pretend to be such a specialized study of Japanese folk songs. It is intended to be a collection of the most representative songs of our country and to offer a handbook of the folk songs which are still being sung throughout Japan." This statement is especially true of Bon Song, of which multiple are included in Hattori's compilation. So, the Dune of Tosa, back to that song, upon first read seems to tell the story of a man who mourns his departure from the beautiful port of Tosa and recalls that his sedge hat has been left behind, along with, quote, all the rest, end quote. A deeper analysis of the Dune of Tosa and its significance during the time of Bon requires a greater understanding of the festival itself and what both Bon and the folk song represent. Bon is said to come from the time of the foundation of Buddhism to help deliver deceased parents from sin. The practice made its way to Japan as early as 606 AD under Empress Suiko. It is thought not to have been understood during this time, but merely be an imitation of the Chinese custom, which Japan only established as an annual educated event in 733 AD. A common belief in Japan is that their forefather spirits are immortal and continue to protect their line in the land of the living. The dead travel from a dark country to a light country and never truly leave this world. However, when Buddhism was introduced, the view of a separate place for the dead was established, making both the welcome and farewell fires serve as guiding lights for the spirits to find their way between the worlds.
I wish I was immortal.
Ooh, yeah. So, but would you want to be stuck with your family for all eternity?
I didn't say I wish they were immortal.
But I'm just kidding, I'm sorry. That's the whole thing, everything, yeah. In this context, the Dune of Tosa takes on greater meaning. The rice he wishes he could give to the western provinces represents the meals that are left to welcome the spirits to the living world. The rice he wishes he could give to the western provinces represents the meals that are left to welcome the spirits to the living world, and his ship is guiding him between the world of the living and the dead during the time of Bon.
You can also welcome me by leaving rice out.
So as his spirit leaves, he remembers all that he has left behind in Surugaya, the small hostel, which may have been a hospice in which he went to die. So these Bond productions were created to be easily and widely accessible and understood to people of all ages to recall their ancestors and pass down their practice to future generations. Overall, these practices reflect that Uraban is a service that directs anyone, both the living or dead, old or young, towards salvation, represented as, quote, a time of pleasure and of quiet recollection of dear ones gone, and also a beautiful event symbolizing continuity with the infinite world beyond. So we have a little time here, I can sing a brief moment of the Dune of Tosa. If we would like.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Ha ha. Got my 60 to 70 year old book in front of me.
I have a book that's like that, but it is called Wind Songs 3, Recorder Melodies, and it's from the third grade. But you've said a few things that reminded me of that book, so I had to say it. Okay.
Okay, here we go. Tosa no suna yama na ya e kome nara yo karo na ni shi no be Zaishu yanya e tadatsu masho, tadatsu masho. That's the first verse out of all of that. And yeah, you have that nyae that was in there that I talked about briefly. That doesn't really mean anything. It's just a filler word and to make it more memorable.
Well, none of it meant anything to me because yes. I don't understand Japanese. So
yeah.
Is that book written in characters or is it like the phonetic English pronunciation? There are characters,
but he does have translations.
Gotcha.
For that. And also, yeah, phonetic in like sort of English, more English spelling.
I just wasn't sure how impressed I should be. Mm-hmm. Like a 7 out of 10.
So, this last section, written word or residue. So how can we apply this knowledge from oral tradition into our understanding of written accounts of history? It has become quite easy for us as a highly literate population to discount the oral transmission of knowledge based on a lack of understanding we have of the accuracy and the unique perspective that these practices could provide. Homo sapiens have been roaming the earth for between 30 to 50,000 years, yet there is only evidence of written language dating around 6,000 years ago. And it is sometimes hard to conceive of the tradition of orality as anything more than, as Walter G. Ong states, quote, a variant of a literate universe, end quote. This has created a wall that we have built for ourselves that obscures a rich vein of history and cultural practice, viewed from a different perspective that could give greater context to our written scholarly understanding of those times.
Donald Trump would be so proud. A wall that obscures culture?
Oh my gosh. Okay. The consideration of oral history is especially important when it is realized that of the many thousands of languages that have been devised throughout history, only slightly over 100 of them have become literate enough to create literature, with many that have never reached past their oral roots. In oral tradition, the only existence of their lessons in history is held in the potential of others to speak of them and pass those stories down. This poses issues for written historical accounts of many cultures, especially when others use their, quote, greater education to solidify their take on events over those who do not have the ability to preserve and distribute theirs in such a way.
Or like that recent episode we did about the Great Ruins of Zimbabwe, where everything was oral and then any artifacts were just taken because it didn't have as much significance to the culture that had developed the literature.
Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, because there isn't anything written in there, we have no idea of their history because it was mostly passed down orally, and the tribes that resided there, nobody knows where they went or even if they survived. So yeah, just that whole culture is lost.
A real tragedy.
Yeah. So Ong can be interpreted to cover this issue in the following example. So this is a large quotation. So imagine writing a treatise on horses, and in brackets, for people who have never seen a horse, which starts with the concept not of a horse, but of automobile, built on the reader's direct experience with automobiles. It proceeds to discourse on horses by always referring to them as wheelless automobiles, explaining to highly automobilized readers who have never seen a horse all the points of difference in an effort to excise all idea of automobile out of the concept wheelless automobile, so as to invest the term with a purely equine meaning. In the end, horses are only what they are not. No matter how accurate, readers who have never seen a horse and who hear only of wheelless automobiles would be sure to come away with a strange concept of a horse.
In the Archie comics, Cleopatra travels forward in time at one point, and she calls cars horseless chariots. And she walks out into traffic and says, "Halt, horseless chariots." And I think about that a lot.
That is kind of the same thing, except for, like, it's if she had not seen a car and you were trying to describe it as a horse, but with wheels instead of legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, by the same means, it can be explained how a person writing on an oral culture as an outsider can twist the perspective of that culture to fit their own understanding, if not attentive enough to those people's own meaning. Text can also be used to spread intentional misunderstanding and word paint the writer's side as a correct telling, or as more moral. So, in conclusion, primary oral cultures have a way of outlasting specific outsider views in the form of formulaic devices built on centuries of poetry and song, as well as easy melodies that became instilled in their popular culture. Even when a primarily oral culture develops an early form of literacy, their poetry and writing still draws heavily from these formulaic devices because that way of thought has ingrained itself so deeply into the culture. And that's where, like, the Iliad and Odyssey in ancient Greece sort of was built off of that structure, like almost mathematical formulas in their head. The study of writings from the first signs of literacy and written text within a society may prove to be closer to the truth of how that culture thought and felt, as well as the struggles that they faced even hundreds of years into their pasts. Though if we do not listen, those outsiders can twist the perspective of a culture to fit their own understanding and paint their own story as a correct telling or as more moral. Folk song and oral tradition provide as close to a primary account of their thoughts and practices as is possible. This being the case, literacy is also essential for development, especially when looking at history and an understanding of art, but it is also greatly complex to the point of creating conflicting interpretations and confusion. Thus, I propose the importance of understanding orality and primary accounts of its telling of history and a culture as a support for scholarly research into written texts. And that's kind of a long form of my thesis that I'm
whew, that going was a to lot be working of information. Off.
Yes. So, and I hope, yeah, again, like, to expand into, like, North American, like, indigenous cultures and their oral traditions.
Oh, I'd be really excited for a part two on indigenous cultures of North America.
Mm-hmm. I will have to see, like, as, like, definitely after I graduate, I'm planning on doing a lot more work into this area of study and expanding on it. And yeah, so it'll be interesting. I want to have something that's, like, almost in a publishable state to present to my master's program.
Mm-hmm.
Before I go into that. But I'm not planning on taking my master's for, like, another maybe 5 years. So
what are you going to do in those 5 years instead?
Probably, like, renovate a house and yeah.
Hey, it works.
And just work a lot.
Nice.
But anyways, any final questions?
You know, I had a question, but it's gone now, so.
Oh, no.
I'll leave it for us in the Instagram comments when I listen back to this episode.
Yes, okay. But that is another one for the archives.
Thank you for listening to the Arcana Archives, an exploration into nerddom.
If you have any questions or suggestions for future topics or guests, please reach out to us at arcanacollective.archives@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Facebook or Instagram with the username @arcanaarchives.
Hope to see you again!